If you're looking for the skills and tools to succeed in real estate investing, you've come to the right place. This show is about breaking through barriers, breaking through limiting beliefs, and breaking through to the life that you want to live through the power of real estate investing. You're listening to the Breakthrough Real Estate Investing Podcast. And now, here are your hosts, Rob Brake and Quentin D'Souza.
So far this summer, there's been some interesting stories going a lot out there, Rob. I don't know if you've heard of any of these, but like I was talking to a developer, a friend of mine, and they sell pre-construction. They are like, you would recognize the name of the company. They're nationally. And, you know, a lot of their single family home construction, just like the condos in Toronto, there's been a lot of deliveries this year, like we were talking about in the last episode, like, but, you know, the highest since 2014. Well, a lot of single family home deliveries have been happening as well. And what's been happening is quite interesting, and it's not happening all the time, but it's more frequent now than ever before. So when people go to get a delivery of their, like they do their inspection and that their PDI, and then they're going to, you know, close on the property, oftentimes they have to bring money to the table now just to close on the property in addition to what they got before or had before, like their deposit, et cetera, because the value of the property has gone down, right? So the value of the property goes down. They still have to close on the property, and it may be worth $100,000 less or $150,000 less. So they have to bring those funds to the table in addition to whatever else they had before. So what I've been hearing is sometimes people will go to these PDIs and then, you know, the house will burn down. So people are burning down new construction houses because they would rather not close on them, and they still are going to have to close on them. It may be a year from now, but they're still going to have to close on them, but rather burn them down than to close on. That's the, like the seriousness of some of the situations. And it's quite different, obviously, in the condo market, but you know, I've been seeing so many, especially in the GTA, you know, a lot of people selling their properties below the purchase prices that they bought them at, for sure. So
please just get me out of this now. Yeah.
It's getting pretty crazy to see. So it's just one of the things that I think is happening. And
I'm sure the fires are coincidental.
Yeah. The only thing is, like, you can kind of see the outline of the car, but the car may be a different car, but you know.
How old are you, Rob? Let me ask a question now.
You put me on the spot.
Yeah, you go for it. I'm older than you.
I'm 47.
Okay, no, I'm 41. Okay, fine. You're old enough. We're going to make fun of young people during this conversation. People who have never been through a cycle. Like,
Rob looks young. That's the problem. You know,
he has. For sure, you were younger than me.
His OnlyFans page is really popular, I hear. I don't know.
Yeah, feet look young. I don't know.
Okay, sorry.
Rock out.
I just keep bugging Rob about that. No, he's a good looking guy. What can we say? One of the other things that I actually sent to Rob this morning was an article of construction company, a modular construction company in Kitchener that's closing. So the company is called Z Modular. And they work on modular construction in order to help facilitate the housing crisis by building, properties at scale in a factory, then shipping them on site, and then box building them, basically. So you're just stacking them and building. And so one of the, and like I've seen this before, and I've done modular construction.
Me too.
And I think that what was really interesting about this article is that the company is an American company coming into Ontario, and they basically said that they're closing their doors because of the length of time it takes to do development in Ontario and the government overregulation. In particular, they talked about financing, and they commented about MLI Select and the CMHC and the length of time that it takes them to actually process their applications. And, you know, CMHC comes back to defend themselves saying, well, while now it's only 2 months. Yeah, except, you know, last year it was a year for an application to go through. And then I had one application that took almost 14 months to go through.
Well, you know, the other extension to the problem, Quentin, which, I mean, we see here, right? I worked for a containerized developer for a little while. And then there are other guys here who are just doing like conventional wood boxes, but built as fully prefabricated modules. MLI in particular, but most financing systems don't account for anything other is it's complete on site, then you can have the money.
Yeah.
And modular builders don't want to let it out of the yard until it's paid for, at least in part. And that's the big reason why we're not making sense yet. Like the most prefab I get here is like wall assemblies and floor assemblies.
Yep.
Comes flat pack like IKEA, but our financing systems are not flexible enough in Canada yet to accommodate fully modular unless, you know, you've got
cash sitting in the bank.
Cash or yeah, it's not ready to work at scale. And there are a lot of loud voices about that, but we're not there yet. And good luck moving CMHC.
No, the problem is there's no competition with CMHC. They're a government body that has a monopoly, and they won't allow any other insurer into the market. So you can't get Canada Guarantee in there or any other insurer. And there are options. They won't allow them in the market because they have a monopoly, and they're being a bully, right? So I mean,
it doesn't say what these guys are going to end up doing, but it's not like that. I doubt they're just going to close their shop. It's going to move somewhere.
Well, they have the majority of their stuff in the U.S.
Uh-huh.
And the thing about that is that they have the flexibility and options of financing within the U.S. that perhaps we don't have in Canada when it comes to this. Mm-hmm. And also, the other problem they spoke about was the development, the length of time to get permits and development. In Ontario, we can talk to Chris about Alberta, but in Ontario, there is a huge problem with the amount of time it takes to get anything developed. You know, it takes like 3 to 5 years just to get to start to gig in the GTA. Who the hell can build when you have stuff like this? It makes no sense. But it's also the reason why we have a housing crisis in Ontario, except, you know, the government politicians won't admit it. They're always blaming somebody else. They blame the province. You know what it is? It's the municipalities are the problem. They are.
We have a whole bunch of interlocking things, but that is a huge part of the problem and why it's so different here. I have a medium hard stop in about 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I can bump that one, but let's put this on tape because it's going to get entertaining quickly, man.
Yeah, let's why don't you jump in? And wait, before we do that, we should actually introduce you. Chris Davis is the product of three generations of real estate practitioners. He's dedicated his career to continuing as the consummate commercial real estate professional. Born into a family of investors, he spent much of his young life contributing to the management over 1,600 residential units and other commercial property. He's a Bachelor of Science and a degree from the University of Alberta with a Master of Theological Studies completed at Newman Theological College, additional courses in search engine optimization, web analytics, social media to ensure Chris's clients benefit from the latest marketing platforms available. His diverse skill has been led to his successful career as a residential sales associate before focusing on commercial property with a specialty in multifamily properties. And just so everybody's aware, Chris is really focused in the Alberta area, and in particular, I would say the Edmonton area. But so he can speak specifically to that. So maybe just quick introduction first to make sure that, you know, we introduce Chris before he gets into things.
Yeah, welcome. Thanks for being here.
It's a lot of fun, and I've known Quentin for a very long time. I'm very glad to meet you, Rob, now. And I think probably Quentin first heard my name thinking about the book that I wrote called Apartment Buildings That Outperform. But even back then, like 15 years ago, I did a bunch of rental website ranking reports to help landlords figure out, when I was still working in search engine optimization, where to advertise for things. And that's something I still get weird phone calls about.
Yeah, I used to get that from, I think I got that through Rain as well.
Yeah.
And so that was where I've known you for quite a while, but you know, we live in different provinces, different places. I've seen you when you first got married to now. How many kids do you have?
We have six kids.
Six.
They make a ruckus goodness. Upstairs. I'm at home and it's summer vacation. So yeah, it's a little noisy.
Yeah.
I'm glad I have an off-site office.
So just to like come back to that conversation around development, why do you think that there is the development difference in Edmonton, in Alberta, in Edmonton versus Ontario?
I think that it, there are a whole bunch of great cliches about different Canadian provinces. Like all the memes have been just so unbelievably on target. And some of this goes back to COVID, without getting excessively political about that. Alberta has a just get shit done mentality, an independent mentality. You know, like until we hit COVID and everybody got those CERB payments, the very Alberta mentality to things like employment insurance and even for farmers, like different assistance programs, is like, I don't want your money. I want to do my job. Get out of my way. And that is like, we actually have a provincial ministry. I think they've changed the name now, but it's essentially the Ministry of Red Tape Reduction. It was enabled by the Red Tape Reduction Act, and their job is to reduce the number of pages for whatever it is they touch, right? So, you know, Quentin knows that I'm part of a company that's building little eightplexes, right? We got a little 50 by 150 lot in Edmonton, and I could put eight units on it. That permit is a little slow right now. We were working on this on Friday. The development permit might take me right now 3 months. The building permit's another 6 weeks after that, which means if you buy the lot today, 6 months from now, I'm in the ground. It's a Class A application. And we have, I don't love this part, we have a slightly more lax building code here than in Ontario or BC, where I know more about those codes, but you can just get in and get going. Like we're doing these eightplexes, you know, in 12 or 14 months, permits included, getting tenants from the existing house out. And when you're doing larger buildings too, I mean, there are some big projects here. You know, a large logistics company, so like outside of residential in Northwest Edmonton, wanted to have built a suit, but lease 350,000 square feet of industrial from the first phone call to shovels in the ground 42 days. The city of Edmonton has said, dude, when those projects show up, we're creating jobs. They will create a tiger team. If you want to do a new development, you call the city and you pay $200 and have a pre-application meeting. I bet you I got that number wrong. But they put all the departments at the same table, from parks and rec to fire to planning. And they all look at your plans, which could be drawn on a napkin. You pay the money, they show up, and you get all the answers in the first meeting. Like, there's just, there are hoops to jump through, but everybody essentially is on the same page of let's figure out a way to get stuff done.
Yeah.
That's the Alberta thing, right?
Yeah, that's good. Like, I mean, I've had issues where you have some departments within the same municipal government that are fighting each other. Like, they don't like each other, and they're fighting each other. It's kind of like, who are you? Like, this is ridiculous. What's your job? Like, you know, your job is to facilitate the building process, not to create drama. This isn't like, you know, As the World Turns or some other, you know, whatever it is. Like, you just get the let's get stuff done. And we do have a red tape or committee in Ontario. I just don't think it's as robust perhaps as what Alberta is with our premier, but in any case, I think, you know, it's kind of interesting to see and hear what other people are doing in other places. And
yeah,
you know,
I think in Ontario that this red tape committee has a lot more to do just to, you know, just to even break into it, right? So the task is much more daunting on any given regulation that they're trying to go through on.
And I think when it comes to housing, we'll talk in a minute, but tons and tons of people moving here from out of province, and a lot of them work in government, but a lot of them see how much cheaper things are here, especially when it comes to housing, and understand that more units will lead to more affordability. And so even the new people who come and work in administration or planning or inspections, they recognize that if you bring these units to market, it will help slow the rate of increase, right?
And talk a little bit about, because you mentioned that you were working on eightplexes, right? Building eightplexes. Mm-hmm. Now that is something where you would have to find the correct zoning anywhere here, and most places won't allow for it. But in Alberta and Edmonton, it's become quite a bit easier, correct?
It's laughable how easy it is now. I mean, like, people who come on these video conferences with me, wrong direction, there's a giant map behind me. Your listeners can't see it. But Edmonton went from having, I think, 27 different zoning codes at the start of this year. They dropped that down to 9 or 10 or 11. Like, we more than halved the number of zoning codes we have. We took essentially 9 for residential and went to 3.5. Like, what used to only work in certain pockets residentially, like this infill thing, now works essentially anywhere you have residential. I've watched this happen over the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years. We've slowly been moving this direction, but now anywhere there's houses, you're able to do, like, from an infill perspective, you're able to do what you want. It's always been the case here that if you're a greenfield developer and you got a quarter section, 160 acres, you can go to them with a plan for the subdivision, and they will, in many cases, almost write a bylaw for you. Like, we have a ton of DC zonings here, direct control zonings here, like a couple thousand of them. You have a big project, they will custom write a bylaw for you, but they took all the other regular residential ones and squished them all together, right?
Is that because they, like, how do you stop the NIMBYism then? Is because it's been zoned appropriately, there's nothing that anybody can say, right?
That's exactly it. They can go to subdivision appeal board and complain, and occasionally you get a unit knocked down, but city council for 2 cycles now has just been willing to say, fuck it. Build it, pardon the French, right? And they had a couple of, so there's a planning consultant in Edmonton called Situate, and Chelsea Jersak's their boss, and they put out a wonderful newsletter of, like, here's what happened at the last council meeting, here are the decisions, how they impact infill, and here's kind of like some of the sides that were said. There have been times where community leagues, all sorts of other people are in opposition to this, and they're like, yeah, but we have a housing crisis and a climate crisis, so let's just do it. And then just a couple months ago, they had a newer community that had a new, like, I forget the document for a community, but basically an area structure plan or a community plan, and they were changing this bylaw or rezoning this building based on the new bylaw, and they were like, I feel a little bad that we're trashing this plan that's only like 3 years old, but I don't care, literally on mic. So you have a council that was really willing to push through and change the entire thought process around housing. And the NIMBYs can show up and they're like, yeah, that's real nice, don't care,
yeah,
do it. And sometimes they do it because of housing priorities and housing crisis and housing affordability. Sometimes they do it because of their perception of climate crisis.
With them smushing it all together, like you said, the residential codes, there is no question, right? Like, totally. I mean,
it's a class A app. Away we go. Yeah.
I mean, and you've got so much, like, you know, we've had record population growth in Canada over the last couple of years. You know, we've really pushed, you know, from 2022 onward, you know, we're up to close to 1.3 million a year. And this year doesn't look like it's going to be, although we've made changes politically, I don't think that's going to actually be reflected until next year. And then you look at Alberta as compared to Ontario. So Alberta, and I'll include these stats in our show notes, but Alberta is really at like a 4.5% growth rate, 4.4, whereas Ontario is 3.5. Now, granted, Ontario has a population about 16 million. And then I think Alberta is like at around 4 or 5 million. So there's a difference in the size of the population. So if you're looking at it from a numbers perspective, that, you know, that it would turn out differently. But from a population perspective, you've got that growth. But it's different when people recognize that there's going to be an issue and then do something with it. So I think that's kind of neat. So how does, and I think that it makes a difference. What we have in Ontario is we have a lot of municipalities now that are starting to create renoviction laws. And they call them renoviction laws. I call them NIMBY laws. They're the same thing, except now they're politically justified by councils. So like a NIMBY, so we want you to build more units, but we don't want you to kick out anybody. Okay. Good luck. Who do you think you are? Are you magic man, magic woman? Like
can you please work make like me that? An omelet, make an omelet without breaking any eggs. It doesn't work that way, guys.
Doesn't work
the chicken
that
is
way.
Not a magic egg. Yeah.
Yeah, so this is the issue that we have. So Hamilton's doing it, Toronto just did it, and you're making it basically what you're doing the opposite of what, you know, what's said federally and provincially. Oh, we want more units. Oh, we want more units.
Yes.
Oh, but we don't want you to get rid of anybody. That's not how it works, people. You can't do that. You know, you can't have your eggs and not make it, you know, an omelet without breaking some eggs. It's all the part of it. You have to look at what the benefit is. The benefit is creating a lot more rental units, right? And so I think that is a huge difference in what we're seeing in Alberta and in Edmonton as compared to what we see in the GTA. We've got some like backwards thinking people who don't understand business and don't understand simple supply and demand. Simple supply and demand. That's all.
And I think that's the thing here is that even, I mean, the political spectrum is a pretty good example, which is that like, you know, an Alberta Liberal is like slightly to the right of a BC Conservative or an Ontario Conservative, right? Everything is just shifted. So even when you get someone who thinks like in on, you know, might be in support of rent control or something there, once they've grown up in the Alberta context, they realize that when you have the flexibility in the market that we have here, it results in better outcomes. And make no, like we spend a lot of time doing and thinking about non-market housing outcomes, right? We're all three of us talking about market housing. People have income, they pay their rent, that's the system. We're doing a bunch of work for a large non-market housing provider here. We actually just got a 3-year contract to be their like real estate consultants. And the non-market housing sector is a huge separate problem here. But here there's a recognition that the two are different. And the things we have in the market housing system that creates the supply, that creates time for people to move is fine. And we talk about things here, like when we look at rent control, here's the big problem with rent control. You can't move.
Yeah.
You're in a unit and the year after you move in, now you're below market. And if you get a job the other side of town, you can't afford to move because the rents are so, right? Here, we stay reasonably close to market, and we went through a 10-year period with no rent growth, right? When our mutual friend Mark Loeffler came to town and started buying stuff here 3 years ago, we said out loud, I know we'll never see the rent growth in Alberta, we will in Ontario, because you can just build units. The flip side is we can stay much closer to where the market is.
Right. And what happened?
Well, and now we are seeing substantial growth. But you know what? I go to the rentals.ca report because it's just such timely information. Edmonton is still ranked 30th for affordability.
Right.
We are not even close, right? And we saw 16% rent growth year over year for two bedroom units, 16%. Rick, I own a building in Edmonton. I'm pretty happy with that, but we're still not even anywhere close to the top of the table, right? We got lots of runway. Calgary has picked up a whole bunch of spots.
And so since we're since we've already just dipped our toe in a little bit, let's talk about the difference between tenant law in Alberta and Ontario and
yes,
the rest of the provinces as well.
You're going to make me cry here.
I'm sorry. And so 90% of my job, I am a multifamily broker. I sell apartment buildings and related development land. Very infrequently, I will touch on like a commercial, like a strip mall or a multi-tenant industrial building I might sell to someone, but I'll only list. I don't do leasing. I don't do any of this other crap. I only do apartments.
Yeah.
I send a lot of referrals out. The biggest philosophical difference for folks who are especially like there are a couple of different parts of the client world I deal with, right? There's institutions, there are private professional investors, and then there are personal investors. And it might be, I mean, Quentin, you fall into that category of a personal investor. Mm-hmm. You're substantial. You're at the big end of that pool, right? So people who fall into that personal world are more frequently trying to do a BRRRR or something like that. And the biggest mental process when you're trying to think value add is here, I want my tenants to stay as long as I can. Whereas everybody out there is like, how do I get rid of my tenants so I can move my rents up?
Isn't that interesting?
Dude, like, right? So the biggest change here is that we do not have rent control. You controls on rent in air quotes. You can increase the rent once every 12 months to any number you want. It has to be reasonable because they can't appeal it, but you can do re-increase once every 12 months between dates of increase. You have to give them 3 months clear notice. So in case this gets dated, it's July 8th, 2024, we're recording this now. If I give the notice, I might drop the notice off now, but it takes August, September, October. So November 1, I'm getting the new rent. That's it. So when we're building or I'm looking at buying something, the metric I care about the most is length of tenant stay.
Yeah.
Right? That's it.
What are they expecting? Like there must be a sort of a guideline that the tenants are expecting then as far as increases go.
You're so Ontario. No, they're not.
Yeah.
There's no guideline. There's no percentage. I mean, like I bought a building in 2016. And my one bedroom rents would have been like $875. Some of them actually went down. Now I'm getting like some of them, the last set of increases I did at the start of this year were, I think, an average of $206 per unit. If you're following along, that's like 20, 25%.
That's
how many
huge.
Tenants moved out of 20? Zippo.
Yeah.
I brought my rents to $1,025 and market was $1,100.
Wow. And you've just increased the value of your building huge too.
Well, I got back to where I was in the hole, but yeah.
So I mean, actually, can you talk about that, please? Because I think that sometimes people go a little too nuts and they don't understand the market of Edmonton. And you've been there for a very long time. And I know people who have bought buildings there back in 2004, 2005.
Sure.
Right. That's when I was getting started. And I know those people and they're just recovering now, some of them.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
So maybe you can talk about that, because let's not get like, I find that Edmonton, like Alberta, moves in the opposite direction as the rest of Canada sometimes.
Sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and fundamentally, Alberta is a resource and production oriented economy. And it will continue to be cyclical. Now it's becoming less and less dependent on those things.
Okay.
I wish it was a video. I have a picture of my family. Like my family immigrated from Ontario to Alberta in 1893 or 1896. And I have a picture of the first non-farm property we bought, which was a hotel here in Bruderheim in 1913. So you've literally, right? My great-great-grandpa standing at the bar. So, you know, when I was in the middle of buying a townhouse when the 08 recession hit, and I called my grandpa and I was like, what the hell do you do? Because you've seen some things. The the cyclical nature of Alberta's economy means that, I mean, when you do a big value add, you move your values from 100 a door to 180 a door. Like, more than anything else, don't suck out all your equity. The equity will save you. Alberta, because we have the ability to move quickly, right? We have good financing. We have very chill zoning laws and building codes. We are the Texas of the North, and I'm fine with that. It means that every time we have a cycle like this, we overbuild. In 08, 07, 08, we had something like 15,000 homes that were given occupancy permits without final inspections. And the city was just like, it's going to take us some time to catch up. Sorry. We will overbuild and there will be a hangover, right? Without going to the financing thing yet, CMHC is putting out so much capital right now. When they dial that back, there will be a hangover. But that's the reality in Alberta, is that there are people who start getting too far ahead of the economic fundamentals. Condo conversions were a classic example, and those are most of the people who got hurt. You just have to be thinking, who's going to buy it next? And who's going to buy it after them? Like, am I buying, creating, building something of value that's going to sustain the value, rather than, oh, look, I bought this box with 8 units in it for 5% down. That does not make good investment. Those are tools that might enhance your investment, but fundamentally, like, that goes back to my favorite metric. Have I built, bought, or renovated something where people will want to live in it a long time? My clients, I was in this conversation on LinkedIn on the weekend. My clients aren't the people who own or buy the buildings. My clients are the tenants. And if the tenants are happy, everyone else will be happy.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way of looking at it. And you know what? I think that we would benefit from it. But the problem that we have here is that we're so, and regardless of what the political people say, we're so overregulated in Ontario that it's difficult for us to do that. But I personally know a lot of people listening understand the buy, renovate, refinance, and rent strategy when it comes to houses. But how do you see people who've left Ontario to come? And I you know who I'm talking about. I've got some friends.
Yeah.
And I actually talked to somebody just last week who was listening to the podcast and booked a 15-minute call with me. And we were talking about, they just bought two buildings in Edmonton as well. Looks like a 20 unit and a 15 unit. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I think that, how does that strategy apply to multifamily properties with the changing, like we mentioned, the MLI Select and all the things that have been changing?
Yeah, it has been, I mean, this is the core, right? Every one of my deals for the last 36 months, at least, has had something to do with CMHC. Before the MLI Select program came in, it used to be just standard rental housing, and now it's all MLI Select, and now it's the new version of standard, and it's all getting crazy. The thing that happens every time this happens, I go back and I rewatch The Big Short and Margin Call, two terrific movies about the financial collapse. A typical house mortgage might be 25% down and a 25-year amortization. That would be normal in the US. That would be normal, maybe a little longer, but that's a normal mortgage. When CMHC wants to let you do 5% down and 50-year amortization, it's free, insane money. And it will lead to excessive risk taking, which is what we saw. And so people came in and used to be able to buy it with anyone else's financing and do a giant reno in 12 months. And you're taking a building you bought for $2 million, you put 500 grand into it, and now it's worth $4 million. And you're able to leverage 3.8 million of it. I got one owner here who's driving 4 Lamborghinis. Not my style, but he did 600 or 800 units like this. It's insane. It's so much money coming back out. And then CMHC said, oh, by the way, You can't take that money out unless you're going to spend it on more real estate, or you can't take that money out unless we like the guy you did the mortgage with the first time. They made that decision at the drop of a hat. And then we just saw this with capital gains. The government, possibly as an afterthought, chose to increase the capital gains inclusion rate and blew up a whole bunch of deals. So this goes back to your basic question, Quinton. What's it like doing a BRRRR for an apartment building in Alberta? It can be terrific. It can be way easier than what you're expecting in Ontario, because we can get tenants out relatively quickly. We can get work done and permits done reasonably quickly, right? You can stabilize. Sometimes you stabilize a building before your tenants are all the way out. You hit your refi and like 6 months in, you're done. Sometimes it's 24 months. You just can't get too exuberant. You do have to be a little bit cautious. Now, the flip side to that also is if you want to get in and get deals, right? If you came to me and said, Chris, sell an apartment building today, I'm like, cool. Give me your rent roll, but the only thing I care about is your lease expiry dates or when I can get tenants out. I don't even look at today's rent.
Right.
I couldn't tell you what today's cap rate is because we don't use those numbers. So you've got to look at the reality of where things are. It's kind of very Alberta-specific tools, right? You got to skate to where the puck is going. Then you also, you know, I love hockey. You have to watch for the check. And that check that's going to show up and knock you off your feet is CMHC changing its policy suddenly.
What
the government deciding to blow it up.
What right? And then they change it back. Like,
I know.
Like,
I know.
Like they have no idea what's going on.
I know. I know. Well, I don't know. I'm Alberta.
No, there's so many examples, especially like last episode with Quinton and I discussing, you know, the certain landlords that, you know, just over leveraged everything. They took advantage of those programs when they could, and then they were doing promissory notes on top of that. So like once you get in and start, you know, this gravy train rolling, nobody wants to put the brakes on, you know?
It's insanity, and it never ends.
But you know what I found interesting is that, you know, you're saying you are skating where the puck is going, and I know you're Edmonton focused, but what do you prefer, secondary, tertiary markets? Like what, and how do you define that? Because how I define it may be different than you.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah. Well, and I think the one other thought there too is just that like people can go and read a million other places about all these CMHC changes and whatnot. I'll tell you, as a guy who's in the middle of deals every single day, the big problem we are about to have is human capital. The lenders simply don't have enough time to place the money they need to. So they're only going to do the biggest deals, right? Yep. People's trust won't write under 10 million bucks.
Yep.
You know, we have two deals out in the market. Well, let's pick three right now. We got a $2 million, $3.8 million, and like an $8 million deal. They're all CMHC. They're all X many dollars over the Canada Mortgage Bond. I didn't check it this morning. It was 381 yesterday or on Friday, right? The little deal, you're paying $1.20, 120 basis points over the bond. The $8 million deal, you're paying like 60 basis points over the bond. If you're following along, that's over 0.5% different in your mortgage rate. It's not a small difference, and it's going to cut your loan amount, right? So
yeah, people don't understand that like that is directly related to your loan to value. So you could be talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars that on a smaller loan. Obviously it's a smaller amount, but it's still, you know, that it's a significant number. And that's one of the things that I was looking for when I was trying to move to different lenders. But now with the changes that have happened, it's more important to have a good relationship with a particular lender rather than, you know, shopping for the best rate, which is what I was trying to do more of. Now it's like, well, because you get a letter of, you know, an LOI from CMHC and it has the lender's name on it. And if you don't go with them, you're stuck. You have to start the process again.
Well, to think long term about it, Quinton, here's the most important part people forget. If you're planning to hold it for 5 years, that's great. But if it's a long term project, and that's the way my brain works, if I'm a lender, I'm going to cut you a deal on the first, I'm going to do 60 basis points on the first one, and on renewal, I'm coming back for 85.
Yeah.
You want the relationship with the lender who will stick around. Yeah. It's so right. I love what I think of as secondary markets here. The last two listings we sent out and the new one coming next week, we've gone back to owners and redone our listings to go for portfolios instead. Hmm. Right? I don't want to sell a $1, $2, or $3 million deal. I want to bundle it. So now we have a $3, an $8, and an $11 or $12 million deal.
Okay.
It's because the people who, it's funny, I'm going to do this social media post probably to be argumentative. The people who want the 5% down are the people doing small deals, and they want the 5% down because they just don't have the cash. The guys who get 5% down don't need it. They're doing the $10 million deal and they got an extra $10 million in the bank.
Yeah.
The lenders can tell when you don't have the money, and to protect themselves, they go for more down payment. They will always find a way to go after you when you don't have it. It's just the way of the world. It's just it. The animals that need the help are the ones that get eaten first. I love hunting. So there you go. There's your prairie analogy of the day.
So what did you mean when you say you don't look at cap rate?
Oh, so I mean like, so cap rate for the folks who aren't really used to it. Cap rate is your income, your net income divided by your purchase price gives you what percentage. It's your unlevered yield. But when someone comes in and looks at a deal, like if we compare a shopping mall to an apartment building in Edmonton. At the shopping mall, I know what my income is today with absolute certainty. I know what it is next year with absolute certainty. And even 5 years out, I'm 95% certain of my income. So I can say, here's the income, expenses, cap rate. That math works. When I look at my rent today on the 8th of July and I say, well, what's it going to be at Christmas? Just I'm going to issue rent increases today. No renos, just rent increases. I don't know how high that could go. I could probably get a good estimate. That's my job. That's the number I use. But I could not tell you where rents will be 24 months from now. I have absolutely no idea. We just did a 16% increase this year. Calgary did 23%. Should I use 23% increases for the next 2 years? I don't know. That's why, to me, cap rates are bullshit. Right here anyways. Yeah, like what's the income? I'm starting to do multi-year pro formas for clients who don't know how to do their own math. But what number do I use? Like if I told you I was going to do 16% increases year after year, you'd be like, well, that's stupid. But for how, right? That's it. So I mean, it needs to make, I want to make sure when a client buys a building that it's performing really well in year three. That's where the rubber hits the road. Right. And I talk about it. Quinton had a copy of my book before. If you look at what the big REITs are doing, yeah, it's
apartment buildings that outperform.
Yes. And actually, if you drop me an email, I have two new boxes showing up. Don't buy it on Amazon. I get like 35 cents out of that one. Send me an email, or I've got a website set up where I actually get $5. It's amazing.
Nice. But when you look at, put that in the show notes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll send you a link. But the thing about the big companies, if you look at like Main Street, who is a large owner here, but tends to work in the scrappier value add category, a building doesn't go on the balance sheets there as stabilized until they've owned it for 24 months. If you look at a larger, more conventional REIT like Boardwalk, and you read their financials, they don't consider a building to be stabilized till it's been on the books for 48 months. That's how long it takes for them to stabilize a building. So when I look at owners, if I call you the year after you bought it and say, how's your building going? The first year is always shit. It's always challenging. Second year, you kind of know what you're doing. Third year, you figured out if you have a winner or a loser, right? Or like the baseball analogy, right? It takes you that long to really stabilize a building in my experience, right? Lock everything in with your on-site, with your maintenance profiles, with your CapEx, with your manager. It takes that long. I did want to circle back to Quinton's comment about secondary markets. It takes longer, right? Alberta really only has two primary markets, Edmonton and Calgary. There are a million people. Other things that I would say make a secondary market is kind of, most people would say 100,000 people plus. So now we're talking about like Lethbridge, Red Deer, Grand Prairie, probably. I think Grand Prairie is about 90,000 people. I would push it further down and say that kind of anything that to me that's like 25,000 plus is a secondary market here. So then we get into places like Medicine Hat, Camrose, Cochrane, Airdrie, St. Albert, right? Anything that's right around the major cities, like in Edmonton, you get like St. Albert, Sherwood Park. Those are like actually Edmonton to me. I live in St. Albert. It's actually really Edmonton.
A lot of those rent guys were buying townhouses in that area way back.
100%.
Yeah, they got
into some trouble. My parents too. Oh. Yeah, okay. Well, too, a lot of, you know what?
Sorry, prices. I don't want to bring up bad memories or.
No, not at all. No, okay. It's funny, but it's
the
just
good
like,
goes with the bad, Quentin.
The good goes with the bad, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Price is what you pay. Value is what you get.
Absolutely.
And when you pay a shitty price, you get a shitty product. So like to go back to my favorite metric, length of tenant stay. When you're buying a cheap townhouse in the northeast of Edmonton for like $80,000, or like today, you could probably go into those neighborhoods and pay $130,000, $140,000. Those tenants turn over every year or two. But I own one in south, like in Millwoods in the southeast that I bought the day the markets collapsed in 08. Since 08, it's been 16 years. I'm on my third tenant. First tenant stayed 10 years, never missed a payment.
Wow.
Right? I paid 250 at the time instead of 130, 150, 180, right? I paid way more for a way better product in a way better area. Like Arlen, one of the first memories I have of Arlen Dahlin, aside from we managed for him, but we were chatting at a rain meeting and he said, I swear to God, Chris, I was looking at financials. The things that have performed the best from an ROI perspective, I overpaid for. Because then I didn't have the problems. I didn't have to reinvest the cash into renos. They just run, right? That's the best part of new construction from an infill perspective anyways. It just runs. So I love any town in Alberta that's more than 10,000 people needs to have Walmart, Canadian Tire, Tim Hortons, BPs, preferably a post-secondary institution, must have a hospital, government offices like provincial court, forestry, parks and rec. They're terrific, right? We've done deals, like I would go into like central Alberta and anything along the Highway 2 corridor, 30 minutes each side. So that places like Camrose, Olds, Innisfail, Crotchfield, I like Rocky Mountain House, right? Lots of these weird little towns. It's the same deal. Like when people call me and they say, I'm coming here from Ontario and I want to buy in Alberta. We ask two questions. First is how much cash do you have? Because that separates the wheat from the chaff real quick for your prairie metaphor of the day. The second question is, do you want cash flow or appreciation? But you can only pick one.
Ah, okay.
Right? And if they say appreciation, I say stay in the core Edmonton, right? Solid neighborhoods, right? If I want appreciation in the Ontario version of this question, it's be like right in TO, right downtown, right in the best neighborhoods. And you're thinking long-term, you're not thinking cash flow, and losing 5% in value now doesn't matter because you're thinking long-term. If you want cash flow, you just go further and further out, right? Every half hour, 45 minutes, you pick up another 0.5% on your cap rate, right? By the time you get to Windsor, you're probably at maybe a 4. I don't know. I don't know how bad it is. But you go to Sudbury, you're getting a way better cap rate than Hamilton. Same deal here, right? You leave Edmonton and start driving north. You know, the portfolio we're leasing in Grand Prairie, by the time you stabilize it, inside of 12 months, it will be an 8 cap. On an $11 million asset, right? We just sold one in Drayton Valley that was like an 8.5.
Wow.
I have a really nice one in Rocky that's a 6, and I have some really nice ones in Edmonton that are 4.5.
Are you still getting CMHC financing at a regular like regular rate, or is there a premium because of the location?
No, there. Generally, the smaller towns, there is a tiny bit of a premium, but if you have a substantial loan amount and CMHC signed off, the rate premium seems to be more affected by loan size than market size.
Okay.
Unless you're in a super premium location, in which case, yes, lenders will chase it.
Very interesting.
It is kind of a, like, we got into the weeds a little bit for lots of folks who are like newer into real estate and buying houses and things. It's fine. I mean, you can still go buy lots of single family houses, townhouses, duplexes in Edmonton and Calgary and lots of these other places that cash flow great. I would not, in a lot of situations, buy apartment condos.
Yeah. Why?
That market here is just really weird. And in particular, older, anything more than 10 years old, older wood frame condos here, the insurance is just unbelievably out of whack. Like, it's insanely expensive. Instead of, like, for an apartment, I might expect $500, $600, $700 a unit. $2,200 a unit a year in insurance, it makes no sense, right? I hate condos. I hate the idea. I hate the system. I hate the fact that a $40 million building could be run by Aunt Edna's junior high teacher.
Oh,
no wow. offense to teachers. Now everybody can send me hate mail, but right? Dude, like, the dude who's like a warehouse worker and a teacher should be running a $40 million building is insane to me.
Mm.
Yeah. Sorry, soapbox of the day done.
Well, okay, so we have people who are just starting out.
Yeah.
Like, walk us through, like, the evaluation process or the multifamily evaluation process for someone like that. Maybe they've bought a couple buildings. Like, these, the couple that I talked to on my 15-minute call was like, you know, they have a 27 building in Sudbury and other, a whole bunch of four other smaller buildings in Sudbury, and they decided that they want to move to Edmonton now. And and they've got those two buildings under contract. But before they got them under contract, what kind of evaluation process would you use?
So there are a handful of things. I'll pretend for the moment that they're coming in with decent amount of their own cash, and they'll be in that like $1.5 to $3 million range. They're buying like a 20 suiter.
Yeah.
The first thing that I look for when I'm looking at buildings personally is area, because you can't change the dirt, right? Everything in life is dirt with boxes on it. Sometimes you rent the dirt, sometimes you rent the box to someone to sleep in, sometimes to build bobbleheads in, whatever. They're all just boxes on dirt. My preference when it comes to dirt, Edmonton's a very car-centric place. We have some transit. You want to have options for transit, but in particular, I think walkability is more important. So when you can buy a place that is, you know, a block or a block and a half away from the basics of every day, grocery store, dollar store, Shoppers Drug Mart, something like that, the tenants who don't have cars will stay much longer if they can walk to the basics. Then when I'm looking at a building, suite mix is my next priority, but it's really hard to find buildings here that have a lot of twos and threes in them for regular apartments. So you just kind of roll with the best you can get. If I have to sacrifice one, would I buy a two bedroom building in a shitty area or a one in bachelor in a good area? I'd buy the good area all day long.
Okay.
And some of that dynamic will change a little bit over time, but I mean, I sold all of Don Campbell's buildings as he kind of exited that phase of his life. And, you know, 20 years ago, he had picked up buildings that were almost all at least half two bedroom buildings, but most of those back in the day got converted to condos and they're gone. They're very hard to pull back.
Okay.
And then when it comes to looking at a building, if we're going to do the value add thing, I'm looking at, like, if you've ever seen like a stacking chart for retail leasing or a Gantt chart for each of the units, I want to know how long until that tenant can be moved out or their rent can be increased, right? And that's a whole discussion beyond the scope of this podcast, but I want to go unit by unit and see how long till that tenant can be out or I can increase the rent enough that I'm getting the fully renovated amount now.
Right.
And then I'm going to offset all of that, right? Because those numbers are going to tell you what it's worth when it's done. Okay, there's the value. It's worth $10 million when we're done. It cost me $1 million to get there. I can afford to pay $9 million for this building. What's worth paying? Not what it's listed for. What's the building worth? But when I'm figuring out what the value is, I'm taking all those rents. Like, as I work for the seller, I'm there to get them more money. So I'm taking those rents and bringing them all the way to what they'll sustain today with no renos. And that's where I put my pricing on, right? Seller wants a 5 cap, buyer wants a 6, but I'm stabilizing the income, stabilizing the expenses. And then if you want to come down the road and buy it at that point and renovate it to get more juice out of that lemon, that's your profit. The seller is going to get the profit for the easy, easy things that require no work. And you're going to get the profit for getting in and doing the renos. And there is a lot of juice in that squeeze, because all these buildings haven't been renovated in 50 or 60 years.
Right. That's interesting. And I've heard, like, you know, I've had the friends that have gone down there and done like Toronto style condo quality. And like, I'm not sure how well it translates in an Edmonton or a Calgary market, but I know they seem to have done well. So
yeah, you know, I think a lot of them have done it in kind of mediocre neighborhoods, but I mean, there are some who have done it in much better neighborhoods and have seen, you know, you buy a better product, you get a better result. Convincing people that they should go into these projects at 140 a door instead of 100 a door, you can lead the horse to water, but not make him drink.
Right. Yeah.
Your second prairie metaphor of the day.
Thank you for all of those.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we really appreciate you coming on and sharing all this with us. We definitely want to get all of the links for the show notes that that you want people to reach out to you through. What would be the best one if you were going to give one for people to reach out to you?
ChrisDavies.ca. is the website, and they, which is being redesigned. It sucks right now, but they can also drop me an email to chris@chrisdavies.ca.
Chris Davies, DAVIES.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and great.
And make sure you pick up where they can get the copy of that book for $5, Apartment Buildings That Outperform.
Sorry. No, he gets $5. It's $20. I get $5. If you buy it on Amazon, I get almost nothing.
Come on.
I will.
Oh, okay.
No, you pay the same price. He just gets more profit.
Yeah.
I will. You know what? I will send out a discount code. It'll take me a minute to set it up, but I'll send that around too.
Awesome. That's great. So listeners can get a discount code for Chris Davies' book, Apartment Buildings That Outperform. And so we'll make sure to include that in the show notes as well.
This has been really terrific, guys. Yeah.
Oh, thanks. Well, I appreciate you coming out. I know you're a busy man with a lot of deals on the go in Alberta, but I do appreciate you sharing. And if people want to get a hold of Rob, how do they get a hold of Rob?
You know what? I keep wanting to say this up at the front of the show, because we keep skipping our housekeeping. We got to get back into that. But everyone knows what to do. Go over to iTunes and rate and review the show and all that kind of stuff, and let us know what you want to hear more of and guests that you want to have on and all that kind of stuff. But other than that, if you want to reach me, it's rob@mrbreakthrough.ca. And I encourage you to please go over to our YouTube channel, Hotel Project Costa Rica.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, because we're having a lot of fun with that hotel, and it's been, you know, a challenge, of course, as well, to do everything we want to do with the budget that we have. And so you can go over there and see what we're doing over at Hotel Project Costa Rica.
I'd love to hear like even video clips of like some of the challenges that you have with it. I don't know if you'd be willing to share some of that somewhere, but that would be, or maybe we'll interview you on that eventually.
I should probably be putting out more posts, but man, I'm telling you, I've been like just laid out for the last like week and a half. It's been insane. I'm coming out of the fog now, but hopefully we'll have more of that coming. Yeah.
Well, I hope you feel better. We did get some great feedback from our last episode with you and I talking. So I wasn't sure how that was going to go, but it worked out really well. And if people want to hook up with me, the best thing to do is I'll do
you get
a
to hook up
minutes.
With you.
Well, I mean, they'll get a 15-minute call. That's as far as I go. I've been married for 25 years. There's
All right.
no hooking up except with my wife that's happening here, okay? It's
Okay.
a
Well, we have to be clear. You never know. Like, you got people calling
Oh
for
yeah, right.
all sorts of
Well,
different reasons.
15-minute call, go to quintindesouza.com. I, by the way, I'm not a realtor or a mortgage broker, so I can't give you that type of advice. And all the stuff we share with you is information. You got to go and do your research and talk to the right people. So thank you all for coming on
It
the show.
is our personal experiences only.
Yeah. And thank you, Chris, once again for coming on our podcast.
Yeah,
Thanks so much,
thank
man.
you. Yeah, it's been fun. All right, everybody, have a great day. See you next time.
Okay, take care.